Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials, and we got ourselves a quieter night, right? At least when it comes to the NBA playoffs. Look, I am just, this has been a series, hasn't it? It has been a series. These NBA playoffs as a whole have been great. Look, I maintain this, and I will continue to say it before we talk to PJ Glasser at 7, look ahead to some NBA draft, and of course, a little something going on in college football when it comes to a controversy in a quarterback, if you will. Look, I say this, and I will continue to say it. I know we're a long way off, but I watch the Spurs and I watch the Thunder, and I see the future potentially for the Wizards. And it's, again, a lot of pieces have to fall into place, and a lot of things have to go their way, and it starts with, obviously, who they're drafting at number one overall, which is, I'm telling you, still up in the air. At least it's a conversation right now. That is the potential for where the Wizards could be. And listen, it's a short amount of time, too. Again, like, I begged this team for years to just rip the Band-Aid off and rebuild the damn thing. And I'd like to think that I had a little something to say in this, and I influenced them, right? But here they are. And look, you watch the Spurs, and you watch what they've built, and the Thunder before that. And I think we're probably going to see Spurs and Thunder in the Western Conference Finals for a long time. But, you know, as open as the Eastern Conference really could be moving forward, because it still is. This Knicks team, there's no guarantees they're back in the finals. There's no guarantees the Celtics get back there. The Celtics could also get really aggressive this offseason. Like, there's a lot of things that are up for grabs right now. And if you're the Wizards, and you're the Wizards front office, and you're looking at what the Spurs have built and what the Thunder have built, both of them have taken massive jumps, even more for the Spurs, right? I mean, the Spurs, again, they shouldn't have even been in the finals this year. They won 34 games last year. They won 62 this year. They needed to win two straight to beat the Thunder. They won on the road in the Western Conference Finals in Game 7, and then they get to the NBA Finals. And I know they looked lost in the first two games, but this is a team that has absolutely no experience together in the playoffs, and here they are at least down 2-1 in the NBA Finals. And that's the model for the Wizards. Building young, building through the draft, getting lucky in the lottery. Let's be honest with ourselves. The Spurs got lucky drafting, being able to draft Victor Wembanyama. They needed lucky drafting him. They knew that was the guy they wanted to draft, and we all knew what the Spurs were doing. But it's just, you watch it, and you watch the run the Spurs have been on, and I'm telling you, this is a team, not yet, but they have the potential to be a team that makes a major jump over the next couple of seasons. Not a few, a couple. A lot of pieces have to fall into place, but you can see it. And listen, when you start winning, you become the villains, too. And I'll tell you this now. Victor Wembanyama is becoming the villain. He is becoming a villain. The NBA has a new villain, and it's Victor Wembanyama. This guy is everything that you'd want to be the face of the NBA, from the work ethic to the leadership to apparently the teammate that he is. But he's also the guy that is willing to take the little guy on the court like Jalen Brunson, take his head and almost squish it together and throw that thing across the court. I mean, look, it's very clear that the Spurs now have shown us that their model is we're going to be physical as hell. We're going to cross the line, and we're going to see if a whistle gets blown. They didn't get whistles blown against them last night. I mean, they really didn't. Think about this. You had Victor Wembanyama throwing Jalen Brunson to the court and laughing at him. You had Stephon Castle running through Jalen Brunson like it was football, knocking him on his ass. And then at one point, you even had a New York Knick in Mitchell Robinson get knocked into Victor Wembanyama because the Spurs just can't control themselves. And they're like, look, let's just hit anybody in front of us that's a New York Knick. And they did. And then the only reason that actually got rescinded as a foul is because the refs looked at it and were like, yeah, the Spurs player actually pushed you into Victor Wembanyama, so we're not going to call a foul. Victor Wembanyama, out of all of this, though, is the face of this organization, is becoming the face of the NBA. And it is very, very clear that Victor Wembanyama is becoming the villain in the NBA. Not the only villain. There's always more than one villain. There's always more than one team. I think the Thunder have kind of gotten into that category too. But we may be looking at in the future where it's Spurs and Thunder as just the teams that everybody hates in the NBA. Unless you're obviously a fan of the Spurs and Thunder, which, you know, here in D.C., we just would want to see them lose and maybe see the Wizards play them in the finals in a few years. But, that was just, last night was, I mean, what are we doing? I'm sorry, what are we, these if you're the officials, you got to get this thing locked up. This could get out of control very, very quickly. And look, every piece is in place for Victor Wembanyama to be that guy. But you can't tell me that this act isn't going to get tiresome real quick, because there's the other part of it too. And I didn't have a problem with this before. and really nobody should to a point, but there's like degrees where it just becomes obnoxious. The dramatic crying from him, like in the tunnel after games when they lose. Look, we want everybody to win, right? We want everybody to want to win. You want players to care. You want players to be emotionally invested. That's what builds rivalries. That's what builds, you know, great series. That's what generates more interest in the NBA. The NBA needs this. The NBA has lacked rivalries for a long time, and we're starting to see a few really brew up. But for the love of God, if Victor Wembanyama becomes the guy that cries every time he loses, just dramatically waving his wacky, waving, inflatable arm, flailing two men arms on the floor, and just wailing, and then at the same time taking guys' heads and throwing them down into the court and becoming this just, I mean, literally an alien villain. That's who he's become. It's too much. And it's starting to feel like too much with this guy. We're right on that edge. Game four tomorrow night is going to be a big, big test on the officials, on the Spurs, on the Knicks, on that Knicks home crowd. And by the way, anybody, I don't care what you're a fan of any team, any sport. If the Wizards were doing the same thing, I'd say the same thing. Do not start fights in the streets when your team loses. Do better, New York. I know people are going to go, well, that's what you expect. No, do better. I mean, stop it, okay? Don't be that. But that's what we saw. We saw a lot of it. There's a lot of emotion tied to this series. There's a lot of emotion tied to a team that hasn't been there in a long, long time. And we, as, you know, here in D.C., know what it's like to suffer for a long period of time with teams not winning. We've been there. But you just don't go into that. But it is very clear that Victor Wembanyama is now building up the resume to become a villain in the NBA. Also probably going to be the best player in the NBA moving forward. All right, we'll talk to PJ Glasser in about 15 minutes or so here. NBA draft. Are the Wizards going AJ Abonsa? Are they going Darren Peterson? There is a lot of talk about a lot of different names still here. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Game four of the NBA Finals tomorrow. NBA draft in a couple of weeks. Yeah. It's been a good time for the NBA. It definitely has. You know, it's rare that we have these moments where the NBA is the bigger topic than the NFL, but we're getting that right now. There's been a lot of wins for the NBA. There's no question about it. Metal Crystal, you were not happy with me siding with the Knicks before, were you? You got in my ear, and I said, "Hold that thought. I need to hear." You had a lot of venom for the Knicks, didn't you?
Look, I'm not pro Spurs or really whatever. I just, like, come on. If there's one team we're going to be like, "Oh, boo-hoo, the Knicks got beat up. Oh no!"
But like, where does that come from?
I mean, just historically, they were thugs for years on that team, just knocking people out, man.
But you can't take previous eras from teams and apply it to now. It's like when people bet, and they're like, over the last 10 years.
The Knicks is first time in how many decades and first team. No. We're talking about old stuff, too. That's part of it when you're in the finals. I'm sorry, it is.
All right, hold on. We need to dissect this a little bit now. Hold on. So you're saying you don't care about the Knicks haven't been in the finals since 99, haven't won a championship since, you know, 1973, any of that. That doesn't matter to you in the story.
I mean, I'm not a Knicks fan, so I don't. That doesn't.
Well, no, yeah, I get that, like, but I'm just saying, you're a sports fan, though.
Yeah,
and you like stories.
I do. Yeah.
So you're saying it's just you just see the Knicks as just as like you just not like either team.
I'm not really a huge fan of either. I mean, I like to watch stars of the NBA.
And yeah,
they're stars, and I'll watch them on both teams, and that's fine. But I don't really care which team wins the championship this year. As far as my heart, I don't care.
I guess it just goes back to the, oh, boo-hoo, the Knicks. Like, they've been villains when really they've just been a mess for decades.
I know, but, I mean, come on. Back when they had, like,
I want to see how far back
I know, I was like, who's the guy that strangled Larry Brown? Sprewell and
you're
stuff?
Talking about, like, yeah, when he strangled PJ Carlissimo. Well, that was before he was with the Knicks, and that was the late 90s, so.
I know, but I've watched the Knicks many years, over the years, and just, I don't know, man. I don't really feel a lot of pity when people are like, oh, the Knicks are getting beat up. It's like the Knicks. Okay,
that's interesting. Right. Because I feel like
it's
most.
Like, you're going to tell me the crowds were being real mean to, like, the Phillies or something. I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't care. That's like, you know.
I guess it's just funny. I feel like they've been such a mess for so long that all they are. It reminds me more of like the Cubs before they broke their World Series curse, right? Like that's more of what I think of with
sure,
the Knicks
I mean,
story.
And I like when Carmelo was there and Stoudemire and stuff, but I don't care one way or the other who really wins. It's I'm not excited for the Knicks to win their first championship in whatever, or the Spurs to win yet another one. Like, I don't
see just the way you said that there means you should be rooting for the Knicks because the Spurs have won a bunch of titles.
Yes, I just either way, I'm not excited either way. There's no.
All right.
I'd be way more excited if there was some team out of left field, just, you know, oh man, these guys haven't ever won or just something, but I don't, you know. The Sacramento Kings were in the finals or something, you know? I'd be like, that'd at least be like, all right, that's cool. Who would have thought that? But like,
their fan base is too obnoxious. They don't deserve it. They're just vile. They're a vile fan base. I've had way too many battles with them on social media over the years when they had one good year. Then all of a sudden the team sucks and they all go back in their holes again. So,
yeah, well, being a Wizards fan, I can relate. I get it.
Yeah, well, then maybe that's the surprise team. We look forward and maybe it's the Wizards. It depends on what they do with the number one overall pick. Look, the Wizards are, again, the Wizards aren't going to be a championship contender in a year, but the Wizards are. The Wizards should be a playoff team next year. Now, listen, there could be a lot more change happening this offseason besides even the number one overall pick. I mean, they could end up moving Trae Young. I know it seems crazy, but there's a possibility there. Anthony Davis doesn't want to be there. Do they move him? There could be value in moving. I know some people say, oh, well, his stock is low. Really, how low? I mean, legitimately, how low for them? They gave up two first-round picks that weren't theirs, but, you know, there could be a team like the Denver Nuggets, that's like, we need to do anything we can to make Nikola Jokic want to stay here, and let's get Anthony Davis and hope that 50 games is enough. Desperate teams make desperate moves. We've seen it time and time again.
Anthony Davis, also the good luck charm for the first overall draft pick right now.
That is a really good point.
Two teams in a row now have traded for him and gotten the number one overall draft
pick. So now they've already gotten their value out of Anthony Davis, so you can move him. They got the number
like
one overall pick.
Rabbit's foot in the lottery.
That's what they needed. That's it. That's all that you have to have. Look, I know this. The Wizards obviously are in a great spot. Great spot. You have the number one overall pick in one of the most loaded drafts that we've seen in decades. I mean, in decades. It may go down as the greatest draft class we've ever seen. We're a long way to know that for sure, but there's a case that it's that. Everybody's talking about A.J. Abanza. I said this yesterday on Grant Danny, and I'll say it again. I know for a fact that the Wizards have been doing their research on Darren Peterson. Now, that doesn't mean that it's a guarantee that they draft him and shock everybody. But it also doesn't mean that A.J. Abanza is a guarantee to go number one overall. Publicly, A.J. Abanza is getting all the hype. That's the bigger name. That was the more just consistent name talked about as the number one overall pick. But that doesn't mean that that's what's going on privately. Darren Peterson is looked at as a guy with a higher ceiling, more of a killer instinct. The creatine and the cramping is generally not looked at as a big deal by NBA scouts because the other conversation has been, yeah, well, he knew he was going to go top three and still finished out the rest of his college season. That goes a long way. Then there's also Cameron Boozer, who is loved by a lot of teams and a lot of scouts for his high-end potential, may not be as athletic as some of these guys, but the floor is very, very high with him. Now, I'm not saying the Wizards are going to go Cameron Boozer. It's down to Darren Peterson and A.J. Abanza. But I would not rule out the potential for Darren Peterson still going number one overall to the Wizards. They're doing their due diligence. They're having a lot of conversations, and they're talking to a lot of people and comparing from people that know and have coached both A.J. Abanza and Darren Peterson. And if you have conversations with people about this, or you just watch when they actually played each other, Darren Peterson worked Abanza. Like, the killer instinct, the Mamba mentality, it's been thrown out there. That's a public thing. I'm not the first person to make this comparison. It's actually Darren Peterson. We didn't get to see a lot of Peterson in college in that 1 year. He also was playing out of position. He's probably going to be more of a point guard in the NBA. He was playing out of position at Kansas. And I'll tell you this, if the Wizards draft Darren Peterson, you better trade Trae Young, because he's going to go at him. Those two will not coexist together. I'm just telling you now. Now, this could end up where they just go A.J. Abanza and it's all done. There is I would put it much closer to like a 50-50 split right now, maybe, at this moment. Again, a lot of stuff moves.
50-50, really?
Yes.
It doesn't seem that close to me, but okay.
You're hearing a lot of stuff publicly that may not be what's going on behind the scenes. Again, teams are doing their due diligence. The Wizards are doing the right thing, and they're talking to everybody. I'm not saying that Darren Peterson is a lock. What I'm saying is A.J. Abanza is not as much of a lock as people think he is to go number one overall. And I think that's the major difference. All right, we'll talk to PJ Glasser a little bit more about this next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Game 4 of the NBA Finals tomorrow. NBA draft a couple weeks away. It is, as I said before, it is a time. PJ Glasser jumps on with me now. Westwood One Sports, Hoops in Five, Game Day Garage. We'll be going to Omaha for the College World Series in a couple days, PJ. Before we get to that, though, you and I have been talking quite a bit about, look, this NBA draft coming up and the talent that's in it. We know the hype. We know everything that's there. And, look, the Wizards have been linked a lot to A.J. Tabonsa, but I'm hearing more and more from people, and you and I talk to a lot of similar people, so I'm curious to see what you've heard, too. Darren Peterson is not out of the question for this team at number one overall. I'm not even talking trade, though. I'd love to see them trade down and get some extra assets with the Jazz, but that's a pipe dream. Do you think that there is a significant chance that Darren Peterson goes number one? Do you think that it's A.J. Tabonsa? And I'm even going to double up on this with you. If you were the Wizards right now, who would you draft at number one overall?
So I'm drafting AJ, Nick. That hasn't changed since all the times we've talked. I'd still go DeBanza one. If I had to put a percentage on it, I'd probably say at this point, I think it's like AJ 80, Darren 20, I say. So I'm pretty confident, but in no world do I think like it's out of possibility that they go with Peterson at number one. What's exciting, Nick, is that I trust the front office at this point, you know what I mean? Even though it's kind of been a small sample size, which is crazy to say with the Wizards, but I think they've shown the last couple of years that they've really done a good job identifying talent, especially at the top of the draft. And then obviously with Winger and Dawkins coming from Sam Presti, and his ability speaks for itself with what he's been able to do with his years in Seattle and Oklahoma City. It's a great draft, as we all know. The beauty of it is, with the number one pick, you really can't screw it up, you would hope. I mean, all these guys are so great, especially DeBanza and Peterson. I prefer DeBanza. I know a lot of other people do. But it would not surprise me if it it would surprise me, but it wouldn't shock me, I should say, if they went with Peterson at one.
So why is it that you would go DeBanza specifically?
I think it's the fit, right? Because you have Trey in the backcourt. You have Sarr. Anthony Davis is one of the big unknowns, as we all know, this offseason. But on paper, that's kind of the starting five, right? And, well, that's four of the starting five. And then it's kind of what do we do with that small forward position? And DeBanza, I just think, slides in perfectly. You look at this, you look at the NBA right now and the players that are having a lot of success for the most part. It's kind of the guys that have the frame of a DeBanza. It's the guys that can do a little bit of everything, and he's so gifted a scorer, and he draws so much attention on the offensive end at his size, what he's able to do. Peterson is such an elite scorer, and he's a solid defender, but I just think DeBanza gives you a little bit more. He can play more positions. And with the roster that the Wizards are building, Nick, and again, if Davis is able to play there with Sarr and what that front court could look like with that length, you put a guy like DeBanza in there as well. And I mean, just like what those guys could do and the wingspan and how they could alter shots, I think to me is really intriguing with kind of a guy who's a bigger body like DeBanza. So I think from that standpoint, how he just slides in with kind of the current roster formation that they have and his ability just to do a little bit better things, do a little bit more better than Peterson does at this point. I think he's safer as well. All lead me to liking DeBanza a little bit more.
It definitely is true that DeBanza's looked at as the guy as like, yeah, he's a little bit safer, and it's like the phrase that's been used a bunch is what you could sleep at night if you draft him, which I totally get. Mm-hmm. So let me throw a hypothetical at you, though, just for the hell of it, because, I mean, at this point, right, there's a lot of games we're playing. There's a lot of lying season and muddying of the waters as well that's here. What if the Wizards decided that it was all about, like, they didn't care about their roster at all, and, you know, in terms of, like, fit, and it was just strictly about upside that was there? Could I get you to lean Peterson at all? Like, hey, maybe even they move Trae Young for the right offer. Let's play hypothetical here. Could I get you to lean to Peterson at all if that was the situation?
I mean, you could, because coming into the college basketball season, Peterson was viewed as the number one overall pick. And I'm always interested, Nick, in any sport, but especially like basketball and football. When you go into a season with a guy projected to be number one overall, and then all of a sudden we get through the season and that guy isn't the consensus number one anymore. And obviously, you know, it's different in basketball with the one and dones, and you're projecting what a guy's going to look like in college. And we know all the stuff Peterson was dealing with at Kansas this year with the injuries and everything that was going on. But again, I mean, he had his moments. He was a great player. We all saw the flashes. We all saw why people thought he was going to go number one. We saw why a lot of the coaches that he played against said he was the closest thing they've seen to Kobe. So the talent's there. The upside is there, which is why I think this isn't such a foregone conclusion that AJ is the number one pick. But I do really think it's that classic case of, do you go with the safer guy, the guy who has the higher floor in DeBansa, or do you go with the guy maybe with a little bit more upside in Peterson? I think in the Wizards position, Nick, if Dallas was drafting number one overall and they just got Cooper Flagg last year, maybe you can take a little bit more of an upside, right? If OKC somehow would have won the lottery and they could have taken a pick with upside, any of those teams that maybe have something to fall back on, fine. But we all know it's been a long time since the Wizards, I mean, really never, since they've competed. I mean, they've never been to an Eastern Conference final as the Wizards franchise. So I think just for them, they have to go with the safer guy, which is why a lot of us, and myself included, keep coming back to DeBansa.
And that's the difference right there. I was going to say, you nailed it, PJ, is that it's more about the position that they're in where you need to mitigate as much risk as possible versus, hey, the upside is there, but we also know that there's a level of safety that's maybe there with AJ DeBansa. Look, tell you this, it's a tough spot for them to be in, yet at the same time, it's an easy spot because there's a lot of talent really at that top of the board. Has there been anybody else at this point now that you look at that you could see maybe making because like every draft always has a guy that jumps, right, and a guy that falls, even in the NFL draft. Right, you always have a name that falls farther than expected. Bane was the guy, you know, in this past NFL draft that was one that you'd look at. Given the workouts, given the stuff that's out there now, at this point, is there any name that you see that maybe is even rising up or you could see falling, either direction?
I think Adai Mara, the big man from Michigan, is super intriguing, Nick. And
he's a big guy, dude. You know,
so big. And tell me he just isn't the perfect fit. Tell me, Nick, he isn't the perfect fit for Oklahoma City after watching that Western Conference final and what Wemby did to Chet. And, you know, Hartenstein's a good defender. He's a good rebounder, but he doesn't give you the offensive power that Cat does and how Cat's been able to deal with Wemby in this final so far. Mara, like you said, he's so big. He's such a good defender. And I think after watching that Western Conference final series, Presti knows he's got to get bigger and he's got to find somebody that can control Wemby a little bit because Chet just isn't that guy. So I could see maybe Oklahoma City looking to trade up, or I could see maybe another team intrigued by Mara potentially. I think he's a very intriguing piece in this draft, so I would maybe look for him to rise. And then the guy that I think is going to fall, I've seen a lot of mocks that are higher on this guy than I am, but Michael Brown at Louisville, there are so many talented guards in this draft, and I just don't feel like he's as good as a lot of the other ones that we expect to go in the lottery. You know, like I take Acuff over him, I take Wagler over him, I take Flemings out of Houston over him, I take Filon out of Alabama. Like there are just other guards that I would take, and it's not a knock on Brown. I just think those guys are going to translate a little bit better to the NBA game. So I think he could maybe go back half of the lottery, like, you know, middle teens or something like that. But I'm seeing him projected as like a, you know, top seven, top eight pick. And I don't know if I see that.
You know, you mentioned the Thunder, who have two first round picks that aren't even theirs. Their own first round pick isn't owned by them yet. They still have those two first round picks. Dude, they could completely shake up this draft. I mean, I could even see Impeach maybe even trading for Giannis around the draft with those picks. And if you're Milwaukee, then you'd have three first-round picks in this draft. I mean, I feel like the Thunder could have a lot of control in this draft, just given the fact that they lost in the Western Conference Finals. They know they're going to have to compete with the Spurs moving forward. And there's some names out there that are potentially unhappy with their current teams. And the Thunder have, it just feels like at this point, enough assets to, build a championship contender for the next 30 years at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like Presti's got first-rounders going into, like, 2040 at this point, right, with all that he's accumulated. But it's so interesting to see what they do because I definitely hear the argument of they were down J-Dub and A.J. Mitchell, two of their better scorers, and that's the reason they lost the series. I think that's fair. But they have a Chet problem. I mean, they just do. And like you said, we all know it. We expect that to be probably the Western Conference Finals for the next decade. So if you're Sam Presti, you got to build your team to go through San Antonio. You have to build your roster to stop them. That's what Tim Connelly did with Minnesota when they were trying to beat Denver. That's what the Knicks have done trying to beat Boston and go through them. Like, this is what teams do. When you know you have to go through a team, you make corresponding moves to try and beat them. And I just look at the Thunder, and they got to find a way, obviously, to stop Wemby. And Mara's the guy that I look at. Certainly Giannis could be intriguing. But, yeah, I do think Presti's going to be aggressive. For a guy who is notorious for trading back and trading players to accumulate picks, I think maybe we could see the inverse of that this offseason. So it's going to be interesting.
Talking to PJ Glasser here on the Fano, what'd you think of Game 3 last night of the Finals? Whew, it's getting heated, isn't it?
It is. You know, Nick, obviously people in this town, I mean, we're no strangers to in a series when, I mean, we saw the Caps against the Lightning in the Eastern Conference Final, take both games on the road, go up 2-0, come home and lose Game 3. We saw the Nats in the World Series go on the road to Houston, lose the first two games, come home and lose Game 3. And that's why I like the Spurs last night. It's like people, you know, they see these series and a team goes on the road, they win the first two games, they come back home, everybody thinks it's a foregone conclusion. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I just like, you know, Game 1, the Spurs were up double digits, the Knicks kind of pulled away. Game 2, they were a Wemby game winner away from winning it. Like, these games have been a little closer than maybe we've all anticipated or talked about. And look, the Knicks have just been on an all-time heater with the way that they're playing. And you're starting to kind of see that shooting regression come down just a little bit. There's just no way they were going to continue to play the way that they were. So we have a series. Game 4 is going to be awesome. A lot of people feel like if the Knicks don't win that game, they're going to lose the series. I don't feel that way. I still think they can actually lose Game 4 and still win the series. But I think San Antonio's got to win it. I think if the Knicks go up 3-1, then they will eventually win the finals. If it's 2-2, we're going to have a heck of a seven-game series, which everybody wants. But, yeah, Nick, it's what just kind of keeps reminding me of, man. I mean, we saw it with the Caps and the Nats and how those series played out, and that's kind of what the Knicks are dealing with. So they got a lot of pressure on them in Game 4.
PJ, going over to college football, the big story, what everybody's talking about, is never something as a sport you want talked about, and it's something bad. And it's Brendan Sorsby now being eligible to play college football after, what, $90,000 worth of bets, and college football was involved. All these things. And look, this stuff's going to bleed over. We get it. But why? Like, how is the? I'm just gonna, you know, I don't even know how to ask this other than this, Peach. How is this possible other than that it was, what, a judge in Lubbock, Texas that allowed this injunction? I mean, this is unbelievable.
It truly is. And it's, I mean, it's just, it's a nightmare for the NCAA. Like, at some point, there's got to be something that some athlete does where you have to draw the line.
Maybe murder? You know, I mean, I guess murder is the only one. God.
I don't know. I mean, maybe if you get a good lawyer, you know, if you get Harvey Specter or something like that, maybe you can get off it. I don't know. But yeah, it's crazy at this point that that he's going to be allowed to play. I think we all feel the same way about it. Obviously, Twitter was blown up yesterday and a lot of media outlets were talking about it. I mean, we all know college sports, when it comes to this stuff, is in a brutal spot. They need some kind of commissioner. They need something, some governing body to set the rules and the guidelines. Never did I think they'd overturn this decision. So it's a terrible, terrible look, Nick. And I'm interested to just kind of see the after effects. You know, there have been talks of like teams that are going to cancel their future games against Texas Tech or are never going to play them in the future. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how that plays out this season.
Now, PJ, I know later this week you are going to the College World Series with Game Day Garage. You are going to be in Omaha. What's the biggest thing that you're looking forward to with that? Because that is kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime events if you've never actually covered it before.
It is. Yeah, I'm excited to go, Nick. You know, one of those events that I've always watched on TV that I get to see in person, and the fact that I get to see my alma mater, Alabama, play.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that, too. So that's what I'm most excited for, is to see them. But I just think it's going to be awesome. You know, like I love the Final Four. I love the March Madness events when you get multiple teams all in that same venue with all the different fan bases that are all there hanging out. It's going to be great. And the fact that, you know, none of these teams made the College World Series last year. So you get all these fan bases and all these fans that are going to be fired up to watch their team play. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I can't wait to get out there.
You know, the one thing I've learned in life, having been to, you know, Vegas with you for the Super Bowl when we worked together in a previous life, is seeing sporting events through your eyes is just another world. You immerse yourself in everything, so everybody's going to get an opportunity to see that. Game Day Garage on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all of that coverage inside what it's like to be at the College World Series. PJ Glasser, Game Day Garage, Westwood One Sports. Good to talk to you, man. Oh, Hoops in 5 as well. Make sure you give PJ a follow on Instagram for all that. PJ, have fun on that trip, man.
Appreciate you, Nick. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, and there he goes. And, yeah, listen, going back to the Wizards, look, A.J. Dabonsa is still the guy that you would feel and certainly should be the favorite to go number one overall. And I think his point about the risk versus reward for the Wizards is key. If you were a team like the Mavs or the, God forbid, the Thunder that jumped up to number one overall, you could take a risk with somebody that's going to be, you know, maybe has higher upside. And that is absolutely Darren Peterson. But do you want to go to the safer pick? So bare minimum, if it maybe Darren Peterson has a better career, but A.J. Dabonsa has a really good career, people look back and go, well, I don't blame them for making that pick. That's something you got to factor in. I mean, there's a lot. Listen, it's a great reward for the Wizards to beat number one overall. But it's also a big-ass responsibility. I mean, it really, really is. I think it's probably Dabonsa. But again, do not rule out Darren Peterson. We've had some surprises at number one overall. They didn't always work out. Elton Brand, nobody expected Elton Brand to go number one overall back in 99 to the Bulls. That happened. That was a complete shock. It was, what, Steve Francis and Lamar Odom were the only names mentioned. Complete shock. And then, well, one that wasn't good for Cleveland back in, what, 2013? Anthony Bennett? Nobody expected that. And there was a reason why nobody expected it, because he was one of the biggest busts of all time. That's probably not going to happen with who the Wizards draft number one overall, though. Nick Ashew on the Fan. You know, one thing I will say, when John Wall has an opinion on anything involving basketball, I listen. I mean, he's great on TV. He knows the game as much as anybody and really understands, you know, the intricacies, right? So when John Wall is somebody that is publicly pushed for Darren Peterson for the Wizards at number one overall, you got to listen. I mean, you do. And look, we're going to hear a lot of noise, and there's only going to be more noise once the NBA Finals are done and once we get to those last couple of days, and I'd even argue hours leading up to the draft. I mean, sometimes we don't know to the very last minute. Remember, when Paolo Banchero went number one overall with the Magic, it wasn't until like right before the draft that it became clear he was going to go number one overall. So we do have these surprises. I mentioned the Elton Brand surprise in 99. I mentioned, you know, 2013 and Anthony Bennett. And again, Anthony Bennett was the wrong pick by the Cavs. But, you know, this is a different draft. But just because you hear a lot of rumors that somebody could go, or a lot of polls like The Athletic, you know, polled a bunch of, you know, front office people that have, you know, said their Wizards are probably going to Bonsa, and that was actually a while ago. Like, this stuff can all still change. Again, they are doing their due diligence right now on Darren Peterson, but most teams will do that. They would be, I mean, unless this isn't the Victor Wembanyama draft, where everybody knew that's who the Spurs were going to draft, and anybody else that they met with, it's just like, look, we're being nice. We're being courteous. We're going through the process. You know we're taking Wemby. LeBron in 2003 with the Cavs. Everybody knew who was going number one. This is a draft right now that's got really four guys that, depending on the draft class, could be number one overall picks in different years. It's just that it's really down to these two. And look, some of it is fit, obviously, that's there. And I absolutely do understand the mindset of the Wizards if it is the case of, like, let's take the guy with maybe less risk. But Peterson's got a lot higher upside. And really, what is... if we really had to ask ourselves, what is the risk on Darren Peterson? What would it be? And it's the cramping and missing games last year, which at least we know publicly, and again, a lot of stuff is talked about behind the scenes. If that is true, then that's remedied and it's not permanent, and you learned your lesson. 5 grams, that's it. You don't need more than that. Is it, well, you know, he didn't really look like a guy that was, you know, as aggressive as maybe he did in high school or really as athletic? Well, we kind of know the reason for that physically. We also know that he was playing out of position at Kansas. He's really more of a one, and that's how where he played in high school, and that's where more of the explosiveness was also when he was fully healthy. And on top of this, you could make the argument that Darren Peterson could have just hung it up at the end of the regular season and just said, nah, I know I'm going high in the draft. I don't need to play anymore. And he still did. So to me, I just the risk about Darren Peterson is really just kind of surrounding games that he missed, and we have a reason for that now. Now, if you're worried that that could be something that's recurring, I understand. But that's really what we're talking about here. And A.J. DeBonta and Darren Peterson went head-to-head this past season, and Peterson worked him. Peterson's the better defender, though DeBonta at times just sacrificed a little defensively because he was the number one option and double-teamed a lot at BYU and had to do a lot of things offensively for them. So I think some of that is just basically, you know, effort. But Peterson's also the better shooter as of right now. He's got that killer instinct, and he's going to be somebody that's going to come in and compete. And it's not saying that DeBonta isn't. I had somebody tell me this, that A.J. DeBonta is more of the guy that wants to be liked, and Darren Peterson is more of the guy that wants to compete. That is from somebody within the NBA. That's all I'll say. And I think that that is something that you have to factor in with this, because you want to draft somebody that you also, and it's not saying that A.J. DeBonta doesn't want to compete. It's just saying that if you're building a young team and you want that competitive culture, you want that edge, you want guys that want to be killers, that's what you need to look at too. There's a reason why teams have these conversations and interviews and do all this background work on players and, you know, coaches that coached them in high school and freaking middle school and all of this. There's a reason why. Because you want to know what type of personality they have. You want to know what type of work ethic they have. You want to know what happens when the cameras aren't on them. Because now everybody can fake anything publicly, right? If the workout doesn't show up on Instagram or TikTok, does it count, right? That's kind of the world we live in now. So I just, again, I'm leaning, this is not about who I think the Wizards should pick. Because if it's who they should pick, I'm taking Darren Peterson. But if it's who I think they do pick, I think it's more likely A.J. DeBonta. But I'm just not in this world of, like, it's DeBonta without question. I don't think we're that's at this moment. Now, that could change. And they could make a decision after all the conversations and everything they had and said, you know what, let's go with the guy that we think has got the higher floor or less risk again. But how do we define this risk? If you're concerned at all about Darren Peterson having issues with cramping or something else down the road, then okay, then that's a different story. If you're worried about how he's built physically, that he's a lot skinnier than DeBonta, okay, but you can, guys have had great careers. Kevin Durant's been all right, right? And he couldn't even bench 185 when he got to the league. He might not still be able to, although he would tweet that he could. It would just be from a burner account, but that's a whole different story. Hey, Victor Wembanyama's doing fine, too, and he's pretty damn skinny. I understand different players, but you get the idea. So you can pack on the pounds and the muscle working with team nutritionists and trainers, and you're getting elite status with that. But if that's a risk for you, then okay. And really, that's what this comes down to. It's splitting hairs. The Wizards are going to have to split hairs for the number one overall pick. You're going to have a list of like 30 things and check the boxes and see who wins in each category between DeBonta and Peterson. Now, who knows? Maybe the Jazz will offer a trade and the Wizards take Peterson at two and Ace Bailey. I know it was a rumor at the beginning. I'm going to try to speak into new existence. That's where you want to go. Get some extra picks out of this. I want to see the Wizards set up like the Thunder. We're 5 years down the road. Everybody's like, oh my God, the Wizards have 3 first-round picks and they just made the Eastern Conference Finals. Ugh. Like, that's what I want said about the Wizards in a few years. That should be the goal. And with the front office that has the ties to the Thunder and how they built that team, it's there. It's a possibility. It's just, there's no guarantee that it's A.J. DeBonta, number one overall. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Look, we all have opinions in life, but sometimes when you get more information, it's okay to at least start maybe leaning the other way or even reconsidering how you felt about something before. That's how life works. Nick Ashew on the Fan. So Brandon Ayuk, I know, work with me here. It's the name that's going to be thrown around for a while until we're not talking about this guy anymore because there's a resolution to his situation with the 49ers. But things got a little weird over the weekend with him on social media and the posts and the shirtless one with the hat, Commander's hat on. And obviously he's making a point. We know what he's trying to do and he's trying to get attention. And there's the other kind of rambling one about the 49ers and getting the belt and all that. Look, he wants out. The 49ers want to hold him hostage until they can get something. And I would argue just to be petty. And that's what you have to remember with this. This is personal. It's personal on both sides. Now, who's right and who's wrong? It really depends on how much information you have and what you know. And we know some stuff publicly. And there are people out west that will tell you it's actually more on the 49ers and the way things have been handled. And, you know, in the end, we're probably never going to know the full story until he actually addresses it at some point. And it's probably going to be on a podcast when he can actually sit down and really tell the whole thing versus a press conference when the team, if the team signs him, whatever that situation looks like, that'll be his side of the story. Because, you know, the 49ers aren't really going to tell you very much. They're just not. Kyle Shanahan, once he's gone, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, anytime there's a microphone in front of their face, they're going to go, no, he's gone. He's not part of this team. We're moving on. That's what you expect. That's what I expect. So we're never going to know the full story about what happened. But I do really want to hear his side of this. Don't you? Like, I understand that there's a certain point where it's like, oh my God, every day he's in the headlines. Every day it's something. And I don't even want the Commanders to have him anymore. And I'll be honest with you. I'm at the point now, I've gone from hell no, don't want anything to do with it, no way, to, you know what? It's really not that much of a situation that's maybe as bad if it's low risk. And maybe, okay, maybe I could buy in. I've been that way for a while. The social media stuff just felt like, I mean, it's, do we look at it as a cry for help and a hostage note? Or do we look at it as a distraction? And I think that's really where you have to go with it. I'm kind of looking at it as a little bit of a hostage note still, but like, don't you at least...
Do you want that distraction in the locker room though?
So here, and that's, and I'm glad you said that, because here's my thing, Metal Chris, is that... The question then becomes, is he doing that because he's so desperate to get released, or is it something that carries over to Washington? Now, I don't think anything carries over for year one. I think no matter what, he's like, I'm just happy to be here, fresh start, Jaden, throw me the football, let me show you that I can still play football. And if that is the case, and he can still play football, then maybe there's the, okay, now pay me.
What happens mid-season when he's like, look, man, I know I'm doing good this season. That's why I should be the number one. Why you guys keep throwing the ball to McLaren?
And that's...
Like that kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about.
That was my... So that was always where I started, was right there, was that. But to me, I think we've gotten to a point now where he... And again, I'm guessing, so I could be totally wrong with this, especially with all the stuff on social media. But I do really believe that there is a level of, please just get me the hell out of here. And I think, again, I know I'm playing a game here and I'm assuming, and we know what happens when you assume. But I am going to go with the assumption for now, in this moment, that it's a lot more of, I'm happy to be here. This is a season where I can rebuild my career. Now, I could be totally wrong, and I will admit it if he shows up and by week five he's posting stuff on Instagram and we're going, oh, we should have seen this coming. I will fully admit right here with this microphone in front of my face and a camera in front of it, and I will tell you I was wrong. But that's where I lean. Because right now, Metal, I feel like it's more about it's almost a cry for help. Get me the hell out of here. But I could be wrong. Because really what we're doing when anything is cryptic like that, what do? We read into it, and that's when things can get dangerous.
It's a little kooky. It's not like AB levels of kooky yet.
No.
But it's he didn't start there either, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It
and listen,
ramped up, and it's he's already starting that direction.
I know. It's one of those stories that continues to grow new branches to the topic tree, right? There's always something new with him. And I understand that behind the scenes, there is it's not like they're not talking about it behind the scenes one way or the other and what it looks like and whatever. But I think we've gotten to a point now where there is at least, I think it's like the pendulum can swing back a little the other way, like, oh, maybe there's, but then this is why I go back again. You know me. Usually I'm like, this is how I feel. I'm going to tell you it. If I'm wrong, it's fine. This is a reason why I'm a little bit on the fence with this, because I do feel like this is a point where he has been there so long. He is, just knocking on the door. Hey, can you let me out, please? I'm desperate to get out of San Francisco. Like, if it's truly him just doing anything he can to just get out, then I can maybe overlook it if it doesn't carry over. But you don't know until he's actually in burgundy and gold. And I think that's where I struggle with it. Like, does that make sense, Metal? Like,
it does. It's just that the chaos factor is not ideal.
I know.
That's the thing.
Here's where I am. If they sign him to like a 1-year, $10 million deal, and it's very, you know, incentive laden and it's very low risk, I'm fine with that. Because yes, you can cut him at some point during the season, and you could argue that yes, they would be cutting him because he's a distraction and you don't want to bring that in. But realistically, if he's a part of the team for a few weeks and it's just bad, then there's really, like, it's not that much. I think we're overplaying the level of distraction it could be. If he's gone, he's gone. Maybe you're asked about it for a little bit, and then it's no more. And if he's not playing well either, then they're going to release him, and it's not like it's going to be the team struggles offensively. They're like, well, why'd you release Brandon Ayuk? They're going to keep him if he's playing well on top of that.
I'm just worried that he'll be perfectly great and entertaining and lots of fun content to retweet and stuff when they're winning, and when they're not, that's what I'm worried about from him.
And listen, that's a realistic worry, because that is the boat that I have been on for a while, and I jumped ship to the other one.
And I love the Commanders, but I'm not expecting them to go 20-0 this season.
I don't think anybody is. If you look around, I don't think anybody feels that way, even them in the building.
There's going to be some downtimes.
There's going to be some downtimes, and that's really the question is does he come in with something to prove? My thing is if you have him in camp, you get an idea relatively quickly what his headspace – well, you're going to know beforehand. You're going to have conversations with him, so you at least have an idea. If they decide, all right, it's good enough, let's sign him, let's get him into camp, and he just looks like he's not there mentally, then you start having conversations about whether it's worth it. So I feel like but that's the thing. If the 49ers hang on as long as possible, because the Commanders and 49ers play, what, week 6, I think? Like, if you're the 49ers, do you want to hold on to him past that game? Because they can. Like, they can keep him on the roster and just, like, they don't have to move on from him at all. Do they just say, we're not going to let him go just to make sure we don't have to see him week 6 when we play the Commanders? I mean, they're petty enough to do that. It's something to think about. But this is the complicated gift that keeps on giving. I don't know if I'd really call it a gift, but I called it a gift in the moment. It is, and then you realize, oh my God, I just want a resolution. You know how it is? It's like when we were talking about the NFL draft for months, and we finally knew it was Sonny Styles in the first round, and you went, okay, now we've got a resolution. Now we move forward.
Do you think there's a chance if he's still on the 49ers and he takes the field against the Commanders that he could try to, like, sabotage the 49ers? Like, do you think that's, like, he seems crazy enough to do something like that?
First off, I don't think he'd even be on the field or on the roster or play a game. But
say they're short on receivers and they just got to throw him in because of injuries. And
I love your chaos factor with this right now. And I'm thinking about it. It's like you sitting there in the control room right now with just twiddling your fingers going, what if this evil decision was made? It's like that's the ultimate villain right there. He's the saboteur of the team. Now
yeah,
that
catches the ball, then like hands it off to the corner or something. You know?
Well, let me tell you this. If he did something like that, he's never playing in the NFL again because nobody's going to want you if you're going to go that extreme.
But if he sees himself as a Commander, he's not on the Commanders. So.
If you're the Commanders and you bring somebody in that does that, oh my God. I love this, though, by the way.
It's like
this
a secret agent on the other team or something.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right, so here's the deal. Brandon, you're going to go and you're going to sabotage him. We want you to turn the ball over when you're playing. They're going to cut you. We'll sign you the next week.
You can signal plays from the bench.
Oh, my God. This would be amazing. This is the best chaos theory I've heard yet for this whole situation, by the way. I love this. This is like AI wrote this. This is well done. Very well done. Oh, my God. Brandon Ayuk sabotages the 49ers to get released against the Commanders, and they sign him at halftime, and he jumps on the Commanders' sideline the next time. Oh, I don't think the rules work that way, but I would love it if it did. You can make a movie out of that, that's for sure. Nick Ashew on the Fan. So there's a lot of rumors that someone's coming out of retirement, and it would be a wrecking crew if he does. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Aaron Donald, this was kind of just a joke, and then he's working out on, are you working out if it doesn't show up on social media? Clearly not. The dude's still built for an NFL season. But now it sounds like there's at least some truth to the potential that Aaron Donald might consider coming out of retirement to play with Myles Garrett and the Rams. Now, he could also come back in the middle of the season, could come back later on, not play a full season. The old Roger Clemens move with the Yankees. It was just like, yeah, you know, maybe now I'm going to return. Now I'll decide. I mean, there is becoming more, it's becoming more and more of a real conversation that Aaron Donald could be back in 2026. And if you're the Rams, I think you'd welcome him back. He's a three-time defensive player of the year. I mean, that's one of the all-time great defensive players. You know, it's hard to believe, though. Think about this for a minute. Aaron Donald retired 3 years ago. It was 2023 when he retired.
I mean, he's in better shape than Phillip Rivers.
You're right. Phillip Rivers looked like a stuffed sausage out there. Yeah, they got him up off the couch. He was like, all right, I'll go sling the football for a while. I mean, really? Yes. He's kept himself in shape for this specific purpose, it feels like. And look, if you're the Rams, one, you'd welcome him back. Two, it's all in for winning a Super Bowl on your home field this year. And it might just be a season. But could you imagine, like, what do you do? What do you do if you're a quarterback and you've got Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald on the other side right in front of you? That has got to be, that's like seeing two freight trains barreling down two separate tracks on a collision course for one spot right where you're standing. That is an incredible, incredible opportunity for the Rams. Look, the Rams are the best team in the NFC. In an NFC that feels like Rams and everybody else. Now, just because the 49ers won 12 games last year doesn't mean that they're going to be in that position. They've started to deal with more injuries. They've gotten older. Brock Purdy, listen, I'm a big fan of Brock Purdy, but Brock Purdy needs the talent around him. They were one of the best offenses in the NFL last year when he was healthy, including when he came back and it was week 11 through the end of the regular season until their final regular season game. They were the number one offense in the NFL. But, you know, they signed Mike Evans. He's, 33? It's not the same Mike Evans that he used to be. Is Christian McCaffrey still the same guy that he's been over the last couple of years? I know he had a monster season last year, but again, with running backs, the amount of touches and carries, and as long as he's played, there's a lot of tread worn off that tire. Does he take a step back? I mean, there's certainly questions around the 49ers, including the power station thing next to him, right? I mean, I don't know. That might be a thing, too. Of course, the NFL cleared that. Oh, it's fine. Everything's good. Okay, we'll see. But, you know, look, there's the Eagles and Jalen Hurts.
They care so much about player safety.
Whoa, they do, Metal Chris. They care about player safety, so much so they're going to give him an extra game in the regular season to be safe. Don't you know that?
Even extra safe. You know, just more chances for them to see that the players are healthy.
It's just amazing. We care about player safety. Play an extra regular season game. Wait, what? I mean, even two bye weeks. But, I mean, if you look at the NFC right now, it just feels very wide open. The Eagles and Jalen Hurts, that's the biggest question around the Eagles now. A.J. Brown resolved, settled, he's traded. They got some picks and all that, but great. Like, you've still got to figure out whether your offense can actually run around it. Oh, by the way, Saquon Barkley. Is Saquon Barkley going to continue to erode like he did last year, or was that a offensive coordinator play-calling situation? Could be a combination of both. What do the Bears look like? I mean, now Caleb Williams is on the cover of Madden, so he's clearly going to be terrible because the Madden curse is real. It came for Saquon Barkley. It's now going to come for Caleb Williams. So there's that. I mean, the Lions missed the playoffs last year. What are they? Do they get back to the playoffs this year? Again, you're just going down the list here, which also leaves some room for the Commanders. I mean, it does. And I know everybody's like, the Cowboys this year. How many seasons have we done this where there's an offseason, everybody's like, this year's the Cowboys' season. Oh, it's the Cowboys' year. Over and over and over again. Yeah, they'll probably be a playoff team. They had a pretty good offseason, drafted relatively well. But again, you're counting on rookies also as part of that defense to make them better. One of the worst defenses in the NFL. You don't jump from one of the worst to, a top 10 defense very often. It can happen, but it's pretty rare. Cowboys won, 7? They were, 7-9-1 last year? They won 7 games last year. They were bad. Cowboys were not a good team. Are we really that confident in Brian Schottenheimer as a head coach? There's a reason why he was a first-time head coach. Like, Todd Monken got the job in Cleveland because nobody else wanted that job. It's the only reason he was a first-time head coach now, because it was like, no one wants the job. You want it, Todd? Yeah, sure, why not? Same thing with Brian Schottenheimer. Nobody wanted the Cowboys job. That used to be a job that was glamorous, and it was the premier job in the NFL. Nobody wanted it. That's why Brian Schottenheimer got it. Now, yes, did Jarrah drag his feet? Yeah, he dragged his feet with Mike McCarthy and firing him and going through that whole process. It took forever. But don't you think that if it was a job that was coveted by the top coaches around the country, whether it's college or the NFL, that you would have gotten somebody other than Brian Schottenheimer, your plan Z? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So that tells you a lot about what's still going on within that team. Even if there's talent in Dallas, they struggle to put that together. And we all know what happens once they get to the playoffs. That's a struggle on top of itself. So, I mean, the NFC is very, very wide open, especially in the short term, right? Long term, things could change. You're building up. Younger quarterbacks start to develop, whatever. I mean, the AFC is kind of already established. You got a lot of young quarterbacks paired with a lot of really, really good defenses, if not elite defenses. And the AFC is going to be jammed for a while, especially at the quarterback position. But if you have a lot of bad teams in the NFC, if next year's draft class of quarterbacks is actually lives up to the expectations, we've played that game before, then you can obviously start to see that shift. It's all about the quarterback. I mean, quarterback is the main determining factor in any team's success in the NFL. It's just, that's how the game is now. But the Rams, man, God, if they got Aaron Donald back with Myles Garrett, oh my God. It's just a must-watch defense every single week. Nick Ashew on the Fan.